Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we play a very tight Rotten Tomatoes game, and Chris Fenton comes in. He knows all about China. He knows everything about China. So we really go deep into China and just how it does work and how it's going to work. And first, I'll tell you about Amigo, the toilet seat bidet, the dreams that dreams are made of. You stop wiping and start washing down there. It is so good. I've got mine. I'll tell you this. There are a few things that once you start, you really don't go back. And once you start the Amigo, you don't go back. The water's warm. It's got the remote right there. Same water you use in the shower to brush your teeth. You know, it's not repurposed or anything. They got a wireless remote. You just hit the button there, set the temperature. No plumber needed. It's easy to install. You can just do it yourself in a few minutes. I did mine. And it's better health, better hygiene. Stop wiping and start washing down there. You get 10% off your first order at myomigo.com/Adam. That's myomigo.com/Adam. Get 10% off. It will change your life. Support for the Adam Carolla podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Imagine how it feels to have an award-winning team by your side through every step of the mortgage process. That's exactly what you get with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage does more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. They've helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. When you're ready to purchase your home, and the home of your dreams, they can help you as well. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 6 years in a row. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Right, Dawson?
Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. It's 10 past early on a Monday morning. Time to rise and shine, friends of mine. We're all live with none of the jive. The station for elation is the toolbox. Thanksgiving in the rear view, along with that turkey carcass soup, so we can finally get excited for what really matters. Next week on the toolbox, the 12 days of Christmas. But right now, let me jingle your bells with a dingo, baby. Remember, it's spring down under on the toolbox.
Jump down the shelters to get away. Boys are cocking up their guns. Tell us, General, is it party time? If it is, can we all come? Don't think that we don't know. Don't think that we're not trying. Don't think we move too slow. It's no use after crying. It's a mistake.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, international movie producer Chris Fenton. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, we play the Rotten Tomatoes game, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, injured? He'll fight for you. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing with a friend. I say good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
I love you, now die.
Jesus.
Chris Fenton has done a lot of movies like Iron Man 3 and Looper. And we know Brian loves
it's
Looper.
One of my all-time favorites, man. I love that movie.
Talk to him about that. Waiting, Blockers, 47, Ronin.
Blockers was way better than it should have been. That's one of those movies where you're like, you see the trailer and you're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Broad comedy. Blah, 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 blah. No, it was some really funny. And John Cena, legitimately funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it turns out these guys are, you know, when I say these guys, I mean him, The Rock, whatever. Just they're good at everything.
They're entertainers.
They're entertainers, and I remember clear as a bell when John Cena came into the morning show and he had a movie out called The Marine, and he was like his first chance to carry a movie, to open a movie, you know. And the way things work is they give you a shot at opening a movie, but if you don't, the movie doesn't perform, you rarely get a shot to open another movie.
We never heard from John Cena again.
That's right. End of chapter. Turn the page. And me and Bill Simmons went and watched it on a Friday at the Cineplex, and we were the only two people in the theater on the Friday that it opened. And I thought, well, this looks bad for John Cena, and maybe he's not going to open any other movies. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think he got a chance to open other movies for a while. He had to take boyfriend parts and sidekick parts and this, that parts. And then he worked his way up to opening movies, and now he's opening movies. So,
do you think John Cena thought he would say, if only Amy Schumer would give me my second break?
And obviously from The Marine to that.
He was great in that, too.
He was.
Yeah. No, look, that's the one thing I think we miss with all these guys, The Rock or Cena or whatever. It's their motor. They have a relentless motor. And I think people do way too much ascribing of other virtues or values. Like, well, you know, he believed in himself. He had to believe in himself. Like, I don't know if he believed in himself. He has a motor. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
okay, fine. But also,
he moves forward. Yeah. Well, a little bit of luck. You got to believe, you know. You got to have you got to catch a break.
And the notion that especially The Rock, it seems so simple now. Like, in retrospect, of course, The Rock is the biggest action star in the world. He's ubiquitous. We all know who he is. His face is everywhere. He's in every movie. He's in five movies a year. Like, we should look at his IMDb, or at least like his Wikipedia, you know, filmography from back in the day, like when he was doing like Scorpion King and movies that kind of went straight to video or maybe had a limited theatrical run. Like, he was in bad, obscure movies.
He had to prove himself, and why shouldn't he? Yeah. He was a wrestling star.
He grinded it.
Yeah.
I stumbled across, so I just got back from San Diego and finished my second stand-up special. I was not planning on doing a stand-up special, but there's something in the water in San Diego where we put the show on sale months ago, and the first show just sold out immediately.
Wow.
And then
pre-sale.
And then we put the, now I'm not this popular all over the country, but there's something about San Diego. And then I said, we'll put another show up, or Mike said, put another show up. And we put another show up, and then that show sold out immediately. And this is months ago.
He said, book a bigger venue.
And I said, you know, I've been doing stand-up all year pretty consistently. So by the time we get there, if we have two sold-out shows, then we should film it. We'll do a second stand-up special.
Yeah.
So we got that. I'll keep you guys posted on that.
I feel like you need to ruminate on it for at least a day. So hopefully we can talk about it more tomorrow.
Thank you. So I...
you should do it today.
No!
stumbled across this song. So I was laughing about Burt Parks and these old shows that Burt Parks would be like, there she is, Miss America.
She's vanilla crooner.
Schmaltzy crooning.
Yeah, take these 60-year-old guys and put like spray tan on them and stuff them into these bad 70s tuxedos, and they stand in front of them like, looking lovely as
your
can be.
I
always thought it was weird. Like, even when I was a kid and I'd see like Mike Douglas would sing like before his show, and a lot of these Merv Griffin can't really sing, but it was like, hey, you gotta sing. It's
he's
a
from
show.
An era when you, if you were gonna be in show business, you had to dance a little bit, sing a little bit.
Do a little talk
singing. Right. Yeah. But it's like Joel McHale can't sing, but they don't force him to go, here she is, Miss America.
Like, you are the dumbest person alive.
I mean, it's
what
like
is wrong with
everyone
you?
Can most people in showbiz can sort of carry a tune, but that's not the same as singing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Being a professional.
And I thought the same. When I would see like George Burns, he'd be singing with Bob Hope, you know, and then George Burns would stop and do a little soft shoe, slow motion, not entertaining soft shoe at all. That was a novelty of an 86-year-old guy like moving around. But I mean, it's like, This is not entertaining. You're not a good dancer. You're not a good singer. Okay. What are we doing?
Tell me where this fits in then, because one of my biggest pet peeves about movies these days, I have many, but one of my pet peeves is when they force actors to sing who have no business singing.
And yes.
Whereas back in the day, it was you had to do it. It was rote.
If you were Natalie Wood, you were sung over.
But now it's like, hey, Johnny Depp, why don't you sing? And Sweeney Todd, it's like, you should not be doing that. Or Russell Crowe, let's have you sing.
Or many Woody Allen movies.
This is atrocious.
Yeah.
Yes.
How does that fit in? Why is that still a thing?
I don't. There's some sort of weird authenticity thing or some ego thing or something. He did all his own singing or whatever that is.
Anne Hathaway ruins it for everyone. Singing on set.
Yeah.
They use the audio from her. She was good.
So many people say that about Anne Hathaway.
She ruins everything for everyone. But no, look, we have stunt drivers. Like when they do Fast and Furious, that's not The Rock doing the driving. No. We get him shot behind the wheel and then we put the stunt driver in there. I think we've all signed off on that. Yeah. We're making a movie. Do that with singing.
Yep, and I get it if it's Freddie Mercury or someone iconic, you know what I mean? Like a voice, you can't imitate that. You can't do that. It's like, okay, fine. But if you're a character.
Unless, bring it back to The Rock, unless you're The Rock, who took singing lessons every day to prepare for Moana, and he was Maui, and he was amazing.
He was a B+.
Yeah.
He's got a motor. Like, Merv Griffin, he couldn't sing. I don't know if he was a singer. Dinah Shore was a singer, I guess, and she did some... Dinah Shore did some singing too. Like it was all kind of talk singing, and it wasn't very good, and nobody cared, and nobody went like, "Oh, this is I'm entertained now." And the dancing wasn't any good either.
I'm satiated.
Yeah, and Bert, like you have Bert Parks. Let's see if you can find Max Zapata, like Bert Parks doing Miss America. Like that's what I sort of grew
classic.
Up like watching. It was just like. There she is, Miss America. It's like doing some slow motion sort of choreography. Standing in front of the woman. Yeah, but totally unnecessary. Mm. And
creepy.
Not nearly what you'd be looking for these days. Also.
Oh, here it is.
So I'll
oh, Jesus.
What year is this?
There she is. I
think this is 1990.
Why are they clapping for him?
And they believe this is the last time he sang.
Aww.
Your ideal, the dream of a million girls.
We could never do this again.
Oh, no.
Can come true in Atlantic City. For she may turn out to be the queen of femininity.
Oh, he would be woke, scolded, and like he queen of femininity.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it just
man,
doesn't have to be a woman.
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. In 2019,
you can pause it, Chris, because I find it problem. I find it problematic. I find this whole thing problematic. So, I was looking. Gary was looking in vain through other shows with one where he did another song. That evidently doesn't exist on the internet where he'd go, the most beautiful girl in the world eats my candy, drinks my brandy, like picks my ties. Like back when you could sing about a chick who did stuff for you or she was naughty or whatever.
Up on Cripple Creek.
And then just stumbling around looking for this, found the most killer session on a Frank Sinatra song you've never heard before, and you've heard every Frank Sinatra song.
Bring it.
And this is Frank. I've never heard him do this song. It's a deep cut, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, for me. I don't know if anyone else knows that song.
I mean, vaguely, my grandpa would play that song once in a while. But
oh, really?
I don't know. I couldn't sing it for you.
By Frank Sinatra? Because a lot of guys covered it.
Yeah,
it
I don't, it's just kind of in my head. It's
anyway.
Old-timey.
This is him at the height of his powers in the mid-60s with a full orchestra around him. Everyone's playing live. Everyone's playing their instruments. Guys are like turning sheet music and trying to stay up with the trombones. Make it big. Make it loud. Look at Frank.
The most beautiful girl in the world. Picks my ties out. Eats my candy. She drinks my brandy.
Guys on the congas.
Girl in the world. The most beautiful star
strings,
in the world.
Horns.
She is
pace it up.
Not even Dietrich, but a sweet trick. Can make me believe it's a beautiful world. Social not a bit. She got a
does. Shine
anywhere. Is that Nelson Riddle? She hasn't
got probably. No problem hair.
I was trying to make sure I heard that right. Has a mortgage. What do I care? It's goodbye care. When my slippers are next to the ones that belong
to the most beautiful girls in the
world. There's 80 people playing.
Wow.
And he's in a drafting role.
And then the horns kick.
Look at Frank.
Frank is
loving it.
Going hard. Guys are pros, man.
This is Peak Sinatra. Frank, stop clapping. So show not a bit. She's got a natural kind of wit.
She'd shine anywhere. And she hasn't got platinum hair. No platinum hair. Beautiful house in the world. It's got a mortgage. What do I care? It's goodbye care. When my slippers are next to the ones that belong. Wow. I mean, that's a 65-piece orchestra.
And live.
All right, America, you're fucking welcome. Now go find that and watch it on YouTube and enjoy the shit out of it. And by the way, that was 1965. You know what we have now? Post Malone. What the fuck? It's not all progress, everybody. It's not all progress. This Post Malone ain't progress from this. This is 1,000 times better. And so those are like, well, he doesn't. Yes, Frank Sinatra could do everything that Post Malone does, but Post Malone can't do this. Jesus Christ. People were professionals.
Yeah.
They're fucking
tight.
They were tight and they were journeymen. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the guys and the girls who played in that band played, man. They played a lot. Didn't do any fucking Roomba vacuum synthesizer bullshit. That was all just boom, done.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
That's Peak Sinatra right there.
Yeah.
Find the band leader.
Now we got Post Malone. Blah. All right. By the way, that was from the 1935. That's a show tune from Rodgers and Hart. From the musical Jumbo.
Jumbo?
You want to see it three times?
No, I've never heard of it. That's amazing.
Well, when Gina says she's never heard of it, that means she's seen it under seven times.
It goes to the back of the line. I do have some questions about the lyrics because I was so listening to, you know, the big band. Is it that kind of My Funny Valentine vibe?
Yeah.
Like, she's not perfect, but she's always there.
She doesn't look like Garbo or Dietrich.
Right.
She doesn't have platinum hair.
Right.
But
she's mine.
She eats my candy.
Right.
Drinks my brandy. Diabetic. The most beautiful. What rhymes with amputation? Dialysis. Hey, she's
no hesitation.
No hesitation. She's had amputation. What rhymes with dialysis?
My gal, she is.
She's on dialysis. Hey, the most beautiful girl in the world. Mixes the brandy with the candy. Eats it with her handy. The most beautiful girl in the world. She's 700 pounds. When she sits around the house, she sits around the house.
Doss and mash that up with the instrumental.
I like that she eats his candy and his brandy.
Wow. Yeah.
You think that's at the same time?
She's a real gold digger.
That was a big theme in those songs, especially the ones Sinatra did back then. Was like, she's not perfect, but she's mine. Like, the lady is a tramp.
Right.
I had to explain that one to Christy. She's like, what does that mean? I'm like, she doesn't do the high society thing.
Yeah.
She doesn't go to dinner at 8.
Not highfalutin.
She doesn't like going to the theater late. She likes to show up on time. She likes to have dinner when she's hungry. She's a tramp, but she's great.
Right. Well, it's funny.
Is that your wedding song, Brian?
I'm trying to convince her.
So there's a Sinatra song that I didn't know about.
I didn't know that either.
And I didn't know it was all filmed and on YouTube and everything.
That was
badass. And put that into your queue, everybody.
Yeah,
that thing kicks.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's fun to grab a little deeper cut because everyone knows the top 10
hits.
Sinatra songs. All right, so we got the Rotten Tomatoes game to play. We have a Dawson mashup. It's a lot of music going on this show. We have had the Thanksgiving mashup that Brian very dutifully and astutely.
I assigned. That was a good call.
We have a great review of Ford v. Ferrari that talks about the climate change implications.
Oh, that's great.
On this movie. There weren't enough
just in time.
Faces of color in it as well.
Have they seen Uppity?
What shall you do when you make a movie from the 60s where there were no black folks or women calling shots in the boardroom at Ford.
Right.
And Shelby had employees, but they were white guys and guys from New Zealand and guys that worked where he had no black faces. Shall you take, you know, so Ken Miles' sidekick was Charlie Agapu, and he was, I think he's New Zealand or Australian or whatever, but he's a white guy. Shall we make him a black guy for the movie?
We scrapped the whole movie.
Well, how does this work?
Yeah,
it's all Hamilton casting.
Same problem with Gladiator.
Should we get some chicks in the boardroom at Ford, like calling the shots? Because they were the secretaries, and the guys were Lee Iacocca and all Don Beebe, and all these guys were. Wait, is it Don Fry? Leo Beebe. Sorry, Don Beebe played. And these guys were all white guys who were there. So, aren't we?
History don't
we
is have what to, it is.
And guess what?
How come all the slave owners in 12 Years a Slave were white? Yeah. Can we do something about that?
And what about the... Yeah, right. What about a little something our way? And then what about... came to the U.S. from London in 1961. Agapu did. Oh, I didn't know that. It's a weird last name. Also, none of the cars at Le Mans had catalytic converters.
Oh, no.
We got to do something about that.
Dark underbelly of the story.
Do you have that review? Sorry, Dawson. Yeah,
absolutely. This is from grist.org. Ford v. Ferrari is the climate change horror film nobody needed. This post contains spoilers for Ford v. Ferrari, a bad movie that you should not see. Mm. By the way, it also says, get your daily dose of good news from Grist.
Good news. You can't go anywhere.
Here's one of them.
Yeah, don't enjoy anything ever.
The opening scene is, in itself, a neat metaphor for our society's addiction to fossil fuels. Even in the face of disaster, Shelby is too addicted to speed and glory to fathom not refueling his vehicle. The ensuing 2.5 hours of Ford v. Ferrari are slick with the same uncanny symbolism. Though director James Mangold never once even winks at the negative environmental effects of combusting all that gasoline, he has unwittingly managed to create a striking cinematic allegory for the climate crisis.
Is this a parody site?
It could be. I don't know. Somebody sent Chris found it. Chris found it online. It's
so absurdly over the top.
There is a... we're in dangerous waters here because there's so much insanity that I now have no idea if something is a send-up or they actually mean it. Yeah. I have no idea anymore. Silly. All right,
it doesn't look like a parody site. It looks real.
Keep going.
The critically acclaimed Ford v. Ferrari, currently the number one movie in the country, is a celebration of the all-American values that got us into the climate emergency and a repudiation of the values we'll need to get out of it. All the greatest hits of American exceptionalism are baked into the script. Individualism, norm-breaking, xenophobia... Ferrari's sucks.
It's a British guy and an American guy working together, hand in hand. They're best buds.
Yeah, but you know those Italians.
Xenophobia.
Ferrari's execs are painted as backstabbers who deserve a comeuppance.
Well,
and frequently, their Italian dialogue doesn't even get subtitles.
What about when we do movies about World War II? How about the way the Italians are depicted in World War II? Arm in arm with the Nazis.
Yeah, the Japanese are shooting at us.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Hey, they're trying to kill us.
What's up? Well, it's what happened. I'm going to keep going with the lack of black faces and women.
So uninterested is the movie in their perspective. The Italian dialogue doesn't get subtitles. White masculinity? There's not a single character of color in the film. And only one female character with a name. Ken's wife, Molly, who is given a lust for speed to match her husband's, at one point zooming the family car around a winding suburban road, careening past others, while Ken yells at her to slow down. Ford v. Ferrari's idea of feminism. Women can pollute and endanger people's lives, too.
Wow. All right.
That's a very strong female character, especially for that era.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. All right. Anyway.
Brian, don't shit on the point shitting.
We don't know what's hyperbole, or we don't know what's a send up anymore. Mm. We don't know.
It's blurred.
It's all blurred.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a good sign.
No.
Not good. And also, I've been saying this for a long time. I think everyone is not listening anymore. I would never, if somebody said, you hear this comedian made a racist joke or something, I would be like, oh, I don't know. It's nothing. I'm sure it's nothing. It's nothing burger or this fast food joint or there's a protest or whatever. I'm no longer.
You're desensitized.
My default setting is it's somewhere between a 0 and a 3. Mm-hmm. Whereas 20 years ago when they said, like, did you hear Jay Leno got caught telling a joke? I'd be like, oh, he dropped an N-bomb or he did something.
Something big.
He did something. Now it's like, it's just somebody, Matt Damon said something about something. Yeah. Okay, all right. We'll take him out to the woodshed. All right, we got the game to play.
Yeah,
we
got I know you're wondering if it's a parody. It's not. She's even doubling down on Twitter, responding to all the people who are mad at her about the
review.
She's
doubling down. Yeah.
Oh, goody.
All right. Are we allowed to say she? Stamps.com. Who?
Her Twitter bio says she, her.
Ooh. Who still goes to the post office, especially during the holidays when it's so busy over there? I've used stamps.com for 10 years over here. Oh, man. I was just signing. Sorry, she, her, but I just signed a bunch of Shelby posters that we're sending out with stamps.com around the other shop. We've had it for 10 years, books and merch and everything. I mean, we're just sending stuff left and right because it's all these Blu-rays are being sent out and posters are being sent out. So right now, it's like having your post office in your computer, stamps.com. Plus, by the way, you get 5 cents off of every first class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. 700,000 small businesses use stamps.com. We got a special offer, 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale, no long-term commitment. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone top of the homepage, type in Adam and start using what we've always used for a decade. Stamps.com. Enter Adam. All right. Our guest is here. Our guest is a really well-rounded producer.
Yeah. You want to play the game?
I think he should.
Take a quick break, bring him in, and play it with Chris.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, wait. I kind of like that mashup, though. Doss, maybe we'll just hear 80, 90 seconds of your mashup.
Sure. Okay. Now, even though the Thanksgiving holiday is past us, this hero will live for all time.
Happy Thanksgiving. We love you. But guess what? Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese, you're cleaning up all this shit by yourself. Junior, Dejana, nor me are going to help you clean up. Macaroni and cheese. Happy Thanksgiving. We love you. Macaroni and cheese. We told you don't put that shit in the macaroni and cheese, but you insist on putting it. Macaroni and cheese. So since you want to do things your damn way, we're going to do shit our way.
We're playing this whole thing.
Macaroni and cheese. We get ready to go upstairs and go to sleep while you clean up all this shit for Thanksgiving.
Who knows when we shall meet again.
Happy Thanksgiving. We love you. But guess what? Macaroni and cheese. This shit ain't fair that we couldn't even get a decent thing of macaroni and cheese. We gotta wait to go back to Goose, Fudgy Karen, to make us some damn macaroni and damn cheese. Macaroni and cheese. Or you decided to do some bullshit you didn't see off the damn internet. Don't experiment on damn Thanksgiving. Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. You experiment by your damn self. Happy Thanksgiving. We love you. Macaroni and cheese. Macaroni and cheese. Auntie Karen gave you the damn recipe, but you chose to do shit on your own. Macaroni and cheese. Don't experiment on damn Thanksgiving. Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese, you experiment by your damn self. Macaroni and cheese. Fucked up the macaroni and cheese. Don't experiment on damn Thanksgiving. We told you don't put that shit in the macaroni and cheese, but you insist on putting it. Macaroni and cheese. Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. So since you want to do things your damn way, we're going to do shit our way. Fucked up the macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese.
You get ready to go upstairs and go to sleep. Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese. Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese.
But guess what? This shit ain't fair. That we couldn't even get a decent thing of macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese.
Macaroni and cheese. We gotta wait and go back to Goon's for Auntie Karen to make us some damn macaroni and damn cheese. Macaroni and cheese? Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. Cause you decided to do some bullshit you didn't see off the damn internet. Don't experiment on damn Thanksgiving. Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese. Macaroni and cheese. Hell, don't try it with us. We don't want that shit. Auntie Karen gave you the damn recipe. But you chose to do shit on your own. Macaroni and cheese. Don't experiment on damn Thanksgiving. Don't experiment on Thanksgiving. You experiment by your damn self. Since you fucked up the macaroni and cheese. Happy Thanksgiving. We love you.
Wow.
That was
so
beautiful.
Good.
Adam Carolla on backing vocals.
Wow. Great job, Dawson.
That's good.
And sis from Bald Brian. Chris Fenton is coming in. He's a producer. He knows all about China. He knows all about making movies and bringing them into China. Has an engineering degree from Cornell University. I like engineers. All right. So we'll talk all about movies. We'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game. We'll do that right after this.
Corolla Drinks fans, we've got an important announcement for the holidays. Sadly, we've sold out of the Corolla scrapbook. But there is some good news. If you're covered on booze for the holiday, we're now offering the stocking by itself for only $40. That's a custom-knit ace hole stocking without the booze and gifts for only $40. Both stocking options are available for just a little while longer at CorollaDrinks.com. Happy holidays from all of us at Corolla Drinks. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Adam, rich man, poor man. People want to give you free clothes.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
I'm writing that shit down,
that's
man. That's a good one. Chris Fenton is here. Chris is a producer and a strategist and an advisor and a deal maker, and he's done so many huge movies. His movies have grossed over $2 billion worldwide, knows all about China and getting into China and all that's going on over there, which will be helpful. Also worked for William Morris back in the day, and we worked together back in the day. So refresh my memory on us back in the day. When did you start at William Morris?
You know, I was at William Morris. I started, what was it, September of 94, and I was an agent in 96. And I actually remember being referred to you from – it was Kevin and Bean and Jimmy. Jimmy Kimmel, I think, was represented by John Farriter at the time, the late John Farriter.
Right.
And you and I had lunch at Cravings on Sunset Strip.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because I heard your whole background, which you continue to talk about. You haven't shied away from that. And I was like, this guy's a really interesting character. I'm sure he's going to become a major, major talent. And lo and behold, you did.
Well, thanks.
And it wasn't thanks to me. I was booking you in some bad shows back in the day. I brought a couple of those booking slips.
I'm interested. So the way I recall the whole thing is about April or May of 94, I got in to train Jimmy for the Bleeda and Reseda when Jimmy the sports guy was fighting Michael the maintenance man. And then I started doing Mr. Burcham on a regular basis. And at some point, Mark Itkin, who was like, became the sort of, I don't know, I guess the whole guy behind reality TV and packaging and stuff like that. He was a gym rat. I think he would go work out at like 7 a.m. before he'd come into William Morris. And as I heard it, he's like running on the treadmill and he's like listening to Kevin and Bean and he's hearing me doing Mr. Burcham and he's going, this guy's funny. We got to sign this guy up. I was, you know, living in a house in La Crescenta with three dudes and driving like a Zuzu Trooper and stuff. I never, the idea of being signed by William Morris sounded, it was like Beverly Hillbillies stuff for me. And I was flattered, but I wasn't sure what I was going to do for William Morris.
It was Beverly Hillbillies stuff for them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the only difference was Mark Itkin wasn't on a treadmill. He was, I think he was just bench pressing.
Probably deadlifting. Guy's built
like a... He's still huge, and, he looks great, and he's such a good guy. But I remember, I think it was one of the nicest restaurants you had ever been to. It was on the Sunset Plaza.
Did it have an indoor eating area?
It had an indoor eating area.
It was definitely...
I had just gotten an expense account, so for me, it was like the first time I had been to something non-fast food. So we had a lot to talk about. It was really fun.
And you have some of the old booking slips. And I'll tell you one thing I remember very clearly is one of the first letters I got from William Morris before I signed or when I signed or something. It said, "We look forward to working with you and your amazing cast of characters." And I remember thinking, I don't do any.
Cast
of character.
Yeah, well, I think what they did is they heard me doing a character on Kevin and Bean. And I said to Jimmy, I don't do characters. I do myself. And he goes, you can't get on Kevin and Bean as yourself. You can get on as a character. So I cooked up a character and then got signed by the character. And then the people that signed me went, well, we love working with all your characters. You must have characters. I had no characters.
Yeah, no, Mark had a great – he had a great eye for packageable talent, right? I think it was maybe you did the Stone Stanley
Man. We did the Love Line. We did the Love Line before that.
I used to go down to Culver City to go see, because you took Ricky Rackman's spot, right?
I did.
And
I don't know how taking, I'm not sure how taking people's jobs work. Like, you know, in the NFL, if one quarterback is, you know, if the coach thinks he could do better with another quarterback, then they put the other guy in. I don't know if that's taking his job or what that...
I think it was the power of William Morris sort of pushed him out and put you in there.
What that is, but I was happy to host a show I'd grown up listening to, which was Loveline. Grew up listening to K-Rock and Loveline. So what are those bookings?
You know what? I just... So I got fired there in the late 2001, so that's probably why you didn't get a call from me after that. But... they sent home a box with my assistant, and I've been leaving it in the garage. And my wife was like, "Whoa, you're going to go see Adam today. You should see if there's any old booking slips in there or whatever." So I pulled them out, and I don't even remember booking these for you, but you still it was LOTZI Incorporated, which you still have today.
Right.
This was looks like you did an instant comedy with the Groundlings.
I did. We talked about that recently, where I went back. What year was that?
So you did it on October 3rd of 98. You got paid $3,300 for one day of work.
Oh, look at
you. Wow, that's
good.
A lot of indoor eating there, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was 98. Yeah, that was the story behind that is I was booted out of the Groundlings, you know, 8 years earlier. And then when I returned as the celebrity host, I was jealous of everyone that was in the Groundlings. Like, but you guys are the real celebrities. You're in the Groundlings.
You're a groundling.
Yes.
Well, and they brought you back because you did it again. Looks like actually the first time you did it was August 20th of 98. And then I have a Tonight at the House of Blues booking here for, what was that, July 6th of 98.
So I remember that.
$2,500.
Gary Busey was like there playing the guitar. There were some bands there. They were trying to do some House of Blues like live
Fourth of July
show.
Party
and that
something?
Doesn't even exist anymore, that House of Blues there, which
so
is crazy.
Sad.
Yeah. No, I don't think it was a 4th of July party, but maybe it was. I don't remember, but they were trying to do like Tonight from the House of Blues.
Oh, yeah. They had the... What was the room called? The something.
Yeah.
The Foundation
Room. It was
up
there.
Foundation
in the room.
Super Swanky.
In the What's
Top
It Room.
Secret.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then that was all I had for your bookings. And then the next one that came up was Nell Carter did...
Alphabetical Order.
Did Match Game. But just to put it in perspective, so you were $2,500 and $3,300. She got paid $43,000 to do an episode of Match Game.
A woman of color?
You got that Nell Carter money.
Wow.
And then what was great is I know you guys were talking about him a few days ago. There was a Bill Cosby booking slip right after.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
How many zeros
say
on
the
that
darndest
one?
Things.
Especially when they're accusing you.
I don't want to get
say
sued
the darndest
for what
kids allege the darndest things.
Yes.
So, that's great.
Anyway, so a blast from the past there.
Wow. What do we what do we need to know about China, the market? There's the Hong Kong thing. There was the whole NBA LeBron thing. You know, what do we God, was there tariffs? Like, where what do we need to know about China?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I thought I had a decent grasp on it, on sort of a common sense. I look at U.S.-China relations the same way you guys sort of discuss a lot of the news here, which is not as, you know, sort of intellectual experts, but more just on a common sense values mm-hmm. basis. And I thought I had a pretty good macro view of China and how it incorporated into U.S. In the U.S. line of thinking and how we should proceed forward. And then that I took three congressional members over to China in August, Congressman Alan Lowenthal from Long Beach, Congresswoman Deena Titus from Nevada, and Ann Kirkpatrick from Arizona. And we were there for 2 weeks, and we actually got down to Hong Kong. The National People's Congress from the PRC actually supported us visiting Hong Kong. They wanted us to hear their point of view, as long as we didn't create some sort of a public nuisance for them or whatever. And we went down there and we met with Carrie Lam, who's the head of Hong Kong, and we heard her side, and we sat with protesters and we heard their side. And then I sort of formulated this idea of where I thought everything stood. And then literally 4 weeks after I get back, that Houston Rockets tweet went out. And it discussed a third rail that no one has been talking about in regards to how commerce and cultural exchange occurs between the two countries, and how it has been occurring with some companies for 30-odd years. And it sort of shed a light on things that I think has been relatively silent up until now. So, you know, I think my thesis in general is that we absolutely have to continue the exchange of culture and commerce between the two countries, because the alternative is a cold war with a superpower that is only getting more powerful by the day. But at the same token, we should look at what we are doing to open up that market and make sure that it somehow plays into the values and sort of the way we think as a democracy here in the United States.
Can tell me if this makes sense. I think our country is one of the few countries that wants to kind of live and let live. And we want to make money and do things like that, ship goods about. But we're one of the few nations that would go in World War II, mop up Japan, mop up Germany, and then sort of leave a peacekeeping force and then pack it up and leave. Most places would keep some land for themselves, if not the whole land. They'd do a little rape and a little pillaging. We're kind of unique in that we'd like everyone to just sort of – I feel like we're a house on a street that just wants all the – everyone on the cul-de-sac just to kind of get along. And I think sometimes we think that's what everyone else wants. But I don't think everyone else wants that. I think a lot of other places, like I think China, they have a, I don't know if it's a 100-year plan or 50-year plan or whatever. They want to dominate. Like, they want to take over the world. We don't have that. So if we're looking at them as, if we're taking countries, like you treat France a certain way and you go, okay, they want to get along, they want education, they want people to be happy, they want to have all their things, and they want to get along, we want to get along, so we can approach whatever subjects we know they want to get along, we want to get along. This is sort of, I've talked about it before, it's sort of like a couple in marriage therapy, where you go, okay, you both want a happy marriage, right?
Goal,
right? Yeah. Now you have different ways of getting there. Or there's disputes or whatever, but the therapist's going to work this out. And it's like, no, the one person doesn't want that. And then, thus, what's the counselor going to do if the one person doesn't want that? But we go into the office always assuming we're the spouse that assumes, like, oh, look, we have our differences. And we're different people, but we do want the same thing.
Yeah, just need a little mediation.
But I don't know that China wants the same thing that we want. Do they want the same thing we want?
They don't want the same thing that we want. I mean, they're humans like us, and there's a lot of very similar attributes to them as there are with us. And you see that when you actually go back and forth there and you sit with them, you realize, oh, as different as they are, they're actually very similar to us in a lot of aspects. But if you look at the hardest part about China, and I always go back to this it was this college band up at, you mentioned Cornell, like it was called Blind Man's Holiday, and there was a line that they said in a song called "All." It was "All I know is what I don't know, and that ain't much," right? And when you think about China, it is that way. The more you try to peel back the onion, the more complicated it gets. So the way I look at it, and I've been back and forth 40 times and over the course of 2 decades, and I have a pretty good idea as an American that lives here in LA about certain things in regards to China. But there's also a very big glass ceiling that I'll never get past. Mm. So I always look at it at the most macro 30,000-foot level, which is – they have 1.4 billion people, and they want them just happy enough that they don't revolt. And revolt means another Tiananmen Square, which, by the way, anybody born around that time or after never even knew about, never saw a picture of that guy holding
over
back the tank.
Over there.
Yeah, the Chinese.
Max Pat, what is the name of their plan? Is it the 100-year plan, the 50-year plan?
The Belt and Road Initiative, right, which is sort of how they're spreading their wings around the world. And then they have 25, 50, and 100-year plans, which they can do through the system of government that they have. They're not on 2 to 4 year election cycles, right? But if you look at the important part, I think, for a policy objective for the United States is to come in and you handle this in no safe spaces, right? Discussion leads to finding common ground and leads to finding places where you can agree to disagree, right? Our discussion level with China is very limited at best. And where we need to get is to a point where we agree to disagree on things. And I look at it sort of like the Fenton's five forces or whatever, sort of like Porter's five forces in business. You have a cell phone and a cell tower. There's five bars that keep them in communication. You have politics, which you're never going to agree with them on, human rights, which we're never going to agree with them on, national security, which we're never going to agree with them on. So you're left with culture and commerce. Those are the two things. Ugh, and if you look at,
we're left to sprint.
Well, yeah, yeah, and exactly. And if you're just down to commerce without the culture, then you're running around town trying to find another bar before you lose.
What's the culture? What's the definition of culture in this example?
So culture, the best way I look at it is from the Korean Peninsula War until 1971, we had frozen relations with China. There was no conversation, which was doable back then because they weren't a sleeping giant trying to spread their wings. Now they are, and now they're a superpower, so it's a lot more difficult. But in 1971, we had a handful of ping pong players that got on the wrong bus, and next thing you know, Deng Xiaoping decides to invite them to China to play tennis or to play ping pong, and they go over there and they come back, and it's this massive sort of cultural exchange over a game of ping pong, right? And that led to Nixon and Kissinger heading over there, and ping pong sort of started it all. But then what really picked up the mantle, I think, is basketball. Basketball was designated as a national sport by Mao back in the 50s, and then the NBA got in there, in particular Michael Jordan, and then on the product side, Nike got in there super early in the early 90s. And that culture of sport and athletics and the fact that players in China that aren't big or strong can play that sport, and they can play it in little playgrounds around the cities, and they have Yao Ming and a handful of guys that can play at the pro level, that really brought cultural exchange into the mix. And then the next level of that was post-Olympics, post all those great athletic exchanges that happened that summer, and Michael Phelps, who just dominated, was unbelievable, and he became a hero even though he was American over there. Then they opened up the movie side of their cultural exchange activity, and they started building a film industry. And in 2009, you had 5,000 movie screens, and cut to today, you have almost 70,000.
70,000 in China?
Right.
What do we have in the United States?
Roughly 40.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 40,000.
Yep.
A quick question for you. This is going back to something you said earlier about wanting to keep their people just happy enough. Would it be a stretch to say that they want to keep the rest of us just happy enough? Because in that exchange, you know, we certainly get something out of it with goods and exports and things like that. But, you know, we're scared and irritated as well, right?
Irritated about them, you mean?
About when you talk about a sleeping giant and the superpower. Is it fair to say that they want to keep the rest of us just happy enough as well?
I think they have a challenge that's so hard. Think about this. They've brought 400 million people out of poverty and into the middle class in the last 20 years. I mean, there's no country that has ever embarked on an adventure like that and never succeeded on it. And they are continuing to bring more into the middle class. And they're doing that. I mean, you look at how we brought people out of poverty in the middle class in our industrial revolution, and we had a fraction of the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have 1.4 billion. When we started our industrial revolution, I think we had roughly 16 million, right? So and oil cost, 30 cents a barrel or whatever it was, and now we're at 65 bucks. Right. So their challenges are massive, and I think they have all they can handle in just trying to get their populace to a point where they're just happy enough that they're going to allow this the regime to stay in power and to grow in their sort of support by the populace.
So every movie that we make that goes over there has to be reviewed, right? I have to look for any negative anything. And they're pretty stringent over there as far as I can tell. And I guess when you make movies here, you have to make them for that in mind. I mean, you're
prepared to be edited.
You're designing it in advance. Like if they go there, I don't think there's as much of this going on anymore. But Ford is in Dearborn and they're making cars and they're like, California has a whole bunch of set of restrictions on smog and whatever. And they go, we better. OK, keep that in mind. We don't just build cars. We have to build cars that we know will pass smog in California because we move a lot of units there. So the company that's making the product is looking down the road at one of the regions are going to sell the product. And American filmmakers have to do that now, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a half empty and a half full way to look at it. The half empty way is to say that we're pandering to the Chinese by implementing things in there that make them happy. I would say there's also a half full way to look at it, which is just simply good business. I mean, you're making the Fast and Furious movies, and you know that the Latino culture loves car movies and loves that world. You put Michelle Rodriguez in the movie because that's just smart business and it's culturally relevant to a fan base that you're trying to cater to. It's the same thing that movie studios are looking to do now when it comes to China. Because quite frankly, if you can actually make a movie, a piece of content, and this goes for really any type of product, but if you can make a piece of content work in both the U.S. and China, right? Very tough needle to thread. But if you can make it work in both of those countries, which are the two largest markets in the world, then it will work everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So now that's what everybody's focused on. Work in those two places.
Do they dub everything, subtitle everything? What happens in an English-speaking movie when it goes over there?
So typically in the first tier cities where a moviegoer is a little more sophisticated, they like the subtitles because they get to see the acting at a much different level. But once you get into the second, third, fourth tier cities where people would rather just sort of hear the Mandarin dialect talked by the different actors, that's the way it's done.
There must be a Chinese Rock and there must be a Chinese – trying to think of the – Vin Diesel – is there one dude who does Vin Diesel? Every 2 years you're going to get this movie. And are you trying to sound like Vin Diesel in Chinese? I'm worried if there's guys assigned to our big movie stars. Do you have a Brad Pitt guy?
Oh, he always covers so-and-so.
Matt Damon guy.
Yeah. I think they're definitely getting a lot more sophisticated when it comes to the dubbing actors so that they can try to – because that market – I mean when we first started looking at the movie business back around the 2008 Olympics, I mean you were looking at 3,000 movie screens mainly in first-tier cities and most of them were like pachinko parlors during the week and then they threw up a couple speakers on the weekends and then that was the movie theater. So now you have the most sophisticated movie theaters on earth. You have tickets in first-tier cities like $25 to go to a movie theater, which on a $10,000 a year per capita income in Beijing, that's like going to a front row of a Lakers game or whatever. So they expect the ultimate sort of experience because they're paying top dollar for it.
I have a specific question. I've always wondered, and maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but in The Martian, which I really like quite a bit, Ridley Scott's The Martian, there was a subplot where China came to the rescue, and I'm wondering if that was reverse engineered to appease the Chinese market, or was that like source material, or do you have an idea?
Yeah, so that was actually a little bit of a lost opportunity, I thought, because the actual source material of the book had that plot in it.
With China.
Yeah, so it actually, they were staying true to the IP, and it played into the China landscape, whereas I think they did get some flack for creating this plot line, which actually wasn't created.
Oh, people thought they created it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
As did I.
Do we, last question, we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game. I always hear, we're hearing a lot of Russia, but what about, then I hear from the insiders, China, we should be more worried about China than Russia. Is that statement true, or do you know?
You mean in geopolitical terms,
yeah,
not moviegoers?
Yeah.
To me, there's only two superpowers on Earth right now. I mean, you could call Russia one because they have the nuclear arsenal, but you know, China is so – I mean, China coughs, our economy catches a cold, right? So it's a major superpower. It is the nice thing about China is they are pacifists, so they really haven't started wars. You know, they're more like if you back them in the corner, you're gonna have a fight on your hands, but they're not terribly out there, you know, creating
flexing
offensives. But they do want to spread their wings, and we're seeing them. You know, I don't want to get all experty here, but like you have South China Sea. You have military bases starting there. The Belt and Road Initiative is allowing them to reach into financing various infrastructure around the world. Which, by the way, if people default on that infrastructure, then they inherit it, and it becomes a really nice place for them to land planes and dock ships and whatever. And we're seeing that in Madagascar. So it is, you know, it's an issue that we need to keep an eye on, but we're not going to be able to contain them. And the question is really, do we have the right to contain them? I think it's more about, can we create a competitive partnership with them of some sort and keep dialogue and communication going and try to keep them somewhat of a competitive ally versus an enemy?
Is this a true statement? When you're dealing with like Al-Qaeda or ISIS or whatever, and that's like you can't sway them by going, you want a mutual relationship, and there's money and goods to be exchanged and all that kind of stuff. It's the person, you know, it's like everyone, if you get sued and you have a person, there's people that sue you so they can get paid. And those people you can pay and this thing can go away. And then there's people who sue you because they hate you and there's no avenue there. So we're not going to really maybe ever mend that bridge with certain parts of, like, let's say the Middle East. But with China, they want to do business, right? And it's like, as long as they want that thing called business and commerce and money, then you always have a fighting shot at a relationship. The second they're just trying to take you down because it's a bad divorce and they're just going to burn the house down with the kids in it, then you can't do that anymore. Is that fair to say that China wants that relationship?
Yeah, I would argue it does come down to the five forces that keep countries working together or communicating. If you look at the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia is typically just commerce and possibly national security, but the cultural sort of emotional tie between our two countries is pretty much not there. The beauty of China is that they do inherently like our culture. They like Western culture. They're obviously prohibited from fully embracing in it, but there is a real sort of love and emotional and humanistic connection that they have to our cultural attributes that make us the United States. And I think that's a really strong connection to combine with commerce that will allow us to operate in some sort of strategic competitive ally, you know, alliance or whatever we want to call it with them versus Al-Qaeda, which we have absolutely nothing
right
in common with.
So it's interesting. So you're basically saying like they like Levi's and Elvis and Marilyn Monroe, and Michael Jordan or LeBron James, and we're kind of in good shape with whoever that culture is because they like us. All right. Let's see. We got the Rotten Tomatoes game to play. Why don't we do that? Chris, you should be good at this, but it never works out that way.
And the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh.
If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus five.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
So throughout
Hold
the past,
on. Nell Carter got $43,000 for win, lose, or draw. What was her show again?
Match Game.
Jesus Christ.
You must get the same note from Match Game.
What happened familiar? To Favorite Nations?
It was good agent team back then.
I think Nell's got to be dead, right?
She might be.
She played Nell Harper instead of Nell Carter.
She's on Mara.
Oh, damn it. But she was a big gal back in the day.
I know three.
Oh,
on Match.
Good luck spending that cash now.
Three.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Dawson.
So throughout the past, we played a lot of great Rotten Tomatoes game. But for every round we play, one movie is always left behind. It's the double-edged sword of the tiebreaker. We always write the bonus track, but you rarely get to hear it. So as you enjoy your Thanksgiving leftovers, we hope you'll enjoy these Rotten Tomatoes leftovers. First, our most glaring omission from the field this year. We themed an entire game to Miami movies, and yet somehow this Sylvester Stallone classic didn't get a mention. Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
You can blame Fondelier for that one. He just really loved the movie Wild Things. But let's discuss a real Miami classic, co-starring Sharon Stone and James Woods. 1994's The Specialist.
Had a hot shower lovemaking scene.
And how?
Had that thing they used to do in the 90s where it's like I was alone taking a sensuous shower and then you were across town taking your own seductive shower alone, but we're like thinking about each other, but I wasn't beating off.
Might as well be making love at that point.
Yeah. It was hot stuff. Beat the crap out of, you know, it's back in the 90s had like generic hoodlums.
Sure.
You know, like you'd encounter them on the monorail.
Thugs.
And they're like, hey, it's they had like the one Mexican guy with the bandana,
with the
you
tiny
know.
Pocket knife.
Then the tough white guy next to him, like, and then the black guy that had like weird central casting thugs, you know. They didn't really
Benetton.
Have tattoos or anything back then. They just took
Tufts.
The bandana. And, yeah, they had to grow out the beard.
Street
3 days growth.
Those were the guys that tried to move his Cobra car. In Cobra.
Oh, that's right. We have played that scene multiple times on this show.
Yeah, that was the Cobra car, ironically. He should have driven a Cobra, but he drove a chopped 50 Mercury. Yeah, but the guys who tried to move was like smoking and leaning on his car.
With the wire?
This would be a lot of work for generic Mexican gangbanger guy in wife beater. And also, it was weird because they were wearing wife beaters and they were 143 pounds, but that guy's got a bandana. Yeah. He could kick my ass.
Badass.
Yeah. All right. This is awesome. You guys, you need to watch this movie for James Woods. You need to watch this movie for Eric Roberts.
Oh.
Eric Roberts does a lot of that. They do a lot of that move where he like, when I see something I like, I take it. Like he said to the girl at the party.
I highly recommend everybody let Adam look at them when they say that.
Oh, yeah.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. A lot of bad dudes doing the hand drag, like
look
a backward hand drag.
Yeah.
I take what I like. And they bring him over, like get in the car, and Sharon. Oh, and also this trope. I miss this trope. They never really follow up this trope, which is, well, they killed her brother, they killed her father, they killed her family, and she hid under the bed. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Now she comes back. She's 37 in this movie. Eric Roberts killed his family. She was 9. Eric Roberts should be in his 70s.
Yeah.
Like, but all the guys who killed her family, well, she hit under
they're
the bed.
They're about the same age.
They're all about they're the same. Grade. They're about the same age. And then
child assassin.
But this move, the move where the woman has to pretend to be romantically interested in the guy to get to infiltrate and gain his trust, you know? And they always doing this thing where it's sort of weird dance if she's attracted to him, but she's not tonight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They never do this. Meanwhile, she's in love with the other guy, Sylvester Stallone, but they never have that follow-up scene at the end of the movie where Stallone and her are like driving off into the sunset and he goes, you didn't suck his dick, did you? That's fucking...
I mean,
I was trying to protect you.
Whatever I did, I was on assignment.
But did you blow him?
I did it for you. Everything I did was to
save
you.
You blew him for me?
Yes, the whole time I'm trying to distract him so you could save the day.
Couldn't you have said you were tired or you drank too much and just went to bed?
I was running out of excuses. I had to do it. You're welcome.
Yeah. All right. It's going to be an uncomfortable vacation for us.
Anyway, you're welcome.
Okay. Did you say his dick was bigger than mine?
I didn't say it. I may have inferred it.
God damn it. Yeah, so they have the weird thing where she has to sidle up to him, but I don't know. She put out?
What's the line?
All right. This is a tough movie. I love this movie.
Oh, boy. Mine just went down 10 points.
Everybody watch this movie.
Is she running from flames and high heels?
Everything's like
stilettos?
Blowing up. James Woods has one of the greatest scenes in the Miami bomb squad department ever with the C4. It's the best. It's the best movie ever. If you want to see
down on 10 points.
Subtle, professional, understated acting.
Like Stella Adler.
Stella Adler stuff.
Stay far away from the specialist.
Not groundlings.
Uta Hagen.
Yeah.
Find me James Woods in the Miami bomb squad.
I know the scene.
Giving a small lecture to the folks. Thank you. All right.
Hold on.
I have written down a number.
Jesus. I have no idea.
The number I wrote down was 44.
Ooh.
100. No, 40.
I had 40 and I changed it to 39.
I had 38.
Wow. Ooh. Okay.
The specialist is rotten at 7.
Oh!
Wow.
There's no God. There's no up. There's no down. This is an outrage. I am outraged.
Once I saw the blue blockers, I knew it had to be a 30 or below.
You tell me if this scene alone doesn't bring it up to mid-30s.
Mid-teens.
And I got to tell you something, sport. This doesn't feel like full cooperation to me. I mean, look at this shit here. What is this? This is, shouldn't this be in the lockup? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You guys are the experts. Maybe you don't need me. I mean, like, what is this? This is,
Semtex.
Semtex. Am I right?
Smells
plastique.
It. Plastique.
Plastic explosive. Am I right? I don't know. You're the expert. I mean, this little bit could blow up this whole area, and if this area goes, the whole building could go up. Am I right? Gosh, I don't know. I mean, maybe if I put this in here...
It's a loose cannon.
What else do we have here? Oh, this is a plunger detonator, am I right? And that's a little mini receiver.
Those windows are so
You know, this
so
looks like
South
American
Florida.
Circuitry to me. And I got to tell you, call me a patriot, but American craftsmanship, it's the greatest in the world. See? Watch this. Here we go.
Just armed a bomb.
I totally remember this one.
Yep. Perfect fit. First time, every time. Screw it on, and one little twist, and voila, a perfect receiver bomb. Which, of course, is absolutely worthless without a transmitter.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
but
the
hey.
Tissue?
This movie, single digits? With this scene? Just fired up the transmitter.
We're hot. Okay.
Shoved it into the plastic.
You deactivate it, you sanctimonious prick.
Okay, you cut that shit, Trent.
Oh, yeah? Huh? Come on.
Okay, you made your point, all right?
Have I? Huh?
Okay, that's enough.
What do you mean it's enough? You think I give a shit if this whole fucking block goes up? I don't. You mean you've had enough? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
You
enough
threw
is
it
enough.
At him.
Huh? I can't do it.
Well,
what the hell are you? You crazy or something?
I'm the craziest person you'll ever meet in your life.
It's counting down the Rotten Tomatoes score.
5, 4, 3.
Please!
Oh, come on.
Take the pen, it's over.
It's just... Here it goes.
Now, here's a tip. You take care of the shit work. And you leave the folks at the party to me. Okay? We on the same page here?
Guy's got an Anthony Michael Hall thing going on.
Yeah.
Ace.
Ace.
super understated, awesome. Smooth, effective, realistic,
layered,
layered,
nuanced,
dimensional, nuanced.
You guys should have you could have showed us some Sharon Stone a little bit.
There's a naked
secondary.
Jesus, I'm disgusted. I don't know if I'm ever going to be right again. The People at 29? Come on. People is one of the greatest films ever.
They liked it a lot better than the critics.
Then I read it backwards.
All right. Yeah, should be 92.
Earlier this summer, remember, Sony Pictures was in all the nerdy headlines for fighting with Marvel over the rights to Spider-Man. So we dedicated that week's Rotten Tomatoes to movies released by Sony but never got to this classic based on a short-lived TV show from the 1970s, the Special Weapons and Tactics Unit.
Oh,
I saw this in the theaters.
With what? Not only grenade launchers and AR-15s, but the most dangerous weapon of all, Samuel L. Jackson.
You either SWAT or you're not.
2003's SWAT.
Stupid.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is just as good as you think it is.
Who else is... I don't recognize any of those.
Oh, it's a Colin Farrell vehicle.
It is?
Okay. LL Cool J and... I don't know who the broad was.
Heavy Michelle Shadows.
Rodriguez.
It's a young heavy Michelle. Shadow on there. Okay.
It's bad, but how bad? I just went 44 on a 7.
That's a sweet poster, the tagline, even cops dial 911.
That's right.
Call in SWAT. All right.
This was voice for that.
Thank you.
I feel like the script was... It felt like the script was floating around forever because it felt like a movie from another era. You know what I mean? Like it felt like it from a 90s era that came out in, I don't know, 2001?
2003.
Oh, 2003. There you go.
Well,
yeah, even more so.
The best... I mean, one of the best theme songs for a TV show ever.
God.
I'm uninspired. I'm just going to keep mine at 44.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where to go from here.
It's not horrific, but it's pretty bad. I give it 31.
Yeah, I have no idea, but if I'm basing this on the last one alone, I'll keep it in that sort of area, 22.
I'm going to give it they wanted to make a reboot of a television series out of it, and I think it was a pretty good-sized hit, so I'm going to give it a 53.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
SWAT is rotten. At 47%.
Oh, Chris.
All right.
Good job not changing it.
People added 52. All right. Yeah. All right.
Here's our horror movies tribe tiebreaker. Some were left scratching their heads. Others were left vomiting in the aisles from the seasickness. Oh. Love it or hate it, our tiebreaker film created a whole new genre of found footage horror movies starring no one you've heard of or heard from since. 1999's The Blair Witch Project.
This is a phenomenon.
This was a hit.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the most profitable films of all time. Like, it cost...
given the... given the
$30,000 or something like that, made tens and tens of millions.
And never to be heard from again, these actors.
Mm-hmm. I did not see this.
It was great.
It really was effective. Yeah. I liked it.
It was spooky.
Yeah.
All right. The lead was in an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Okay, I stand corrected.
All right. Well, so I think the critics like things that are a little unique and out of the box and the low budget with the high return at the box office. I think there's... but is it a 90s? Is it an 80s? Is it a 70s?
Brian, wasn't there some sort of sequel?
There was, there's at least one sequel.
Yeah.
Book of Secrets.
Oh, okay.
$60,000 budget with a $250 million
upside. That's good business.
I remember the deal for the filmmakers essentially paid them very little unless the box office hit $40 million, and then they think they took something like 80% of it or something.
Oh,
it was
my
crazy.
God.
It was a real phenomenon.
Okay.
All right. I think the critics... like movies like this because they want to like movies like this because they're good stories, even if as well as being good. So I went 86.
I went 86 also, right here.
88.
I went 81.
Wow.
You guys all danced around that pretty well. The Blair Witch Project is certified fresh at 87.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Nice work.
Okay.
It's a good movie.
People at 56.
Audience scale.
You know what happened? It got all buzzed up, and then people went and saw, is that that good?
It's shot on a home video camera.
Right. Yeah. That's what happened. Yeah.
Of course, throughout the year, we featured products from the Corolla Drinks Monthly Nut. Back when we did our fifth package,
I got a quick question. When you're in England or Britain, and you're doing dumb person voice, Do you do Cockney or do you do what we do? It's like, I saw a movie. I didn't like it.
Okay, Governor.
We lower our voice.
I don't love.
Make it a little different. If you speak like the proper Queen's English, you just turn into Andy Capp.
Yeah, yes. What's their version?
That's
you
fair.
Turn into the manager of.
Or you dumb American.
You say, duh.
No, I had an English girlfriend and I was like, who is your John Doe? And she's like, Joe Bloggs.
Joe Bloggs.
I'm trying to think.
And
of like-
that's their John Doe. And then I got a Swedish guy. He's an editor at the other shop. And I'm like, who's your John Doe? Like when they find the body with the head missing in the river. And they got a John Doe. And he's like, eh, we don't have one. And I thought, I want to move there.
Yeah.
Yep. I want to move to a place that doesn't have a John Doe.
Not enough incidents of that happening.
When the body's charred beyond recognition and they're getting dental records from the 9-year-olds that are in the house, we have our John Doe's. Yeah. They don't have John Doe.
I'm trying to think of all the British movies I've seen. I can't remember them doing the dumb inflection.
Well, if they're doing an American accent, they're attempting to do a Southern American accent.
And it's dumb. They do a dumb one. But when they're doing what we're doing, when I make fun of like my dumb friends, hey, what time's the movie start?
The Burbage Project.
They're doing Chimney Sweep.
Okay.
That's my guess. Yeah.
Okay. They're going Cockney. Yeah. All right. Someone will tell us.
So back when we did our fifth monthly nut package, we thought it would be fun to highlight the fifth film in our favorite franchise. Rooftop chases through Rio de Janeiro, a stolen bank vault careening through the streets, and the introduction of The Rock's character, Special Agent Luke Hobbs. 2011's Fast Five.
This is a good one, man. Oh. It's fun.
It's a good movie. This is also tough because this is an in-between spot where the critics, were they on board with how silly this? Because they got well-reviewed later on, but early on they got killed.
This one was legitimately had like a cool story dragging the vault across the street.
Well, one of your neighbors, Chris Morgan, wrote it. So, you know, he's quite a writer when it comes to these movies.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
And then Neil Moritz, who produced SWAT.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we got two of his right here.
Coming full circle. Did Chris write this one?
He wrote this one.
This is definitely one of the best written ones out there. And it's funny, you know, I always said, like, Kane from Kung Fu, for a guy who never wanted any trouble, he sure found a way to kick the shit out of everyone in the town he went into. And Vin Diesel's all about family.
Yeah.
Or he's all about busting orbital sockets. Like, he's super into family, and then he beats the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Normally, guys that are very family-oriented...
It's like Ned Flanders.
They do... Yeah, they don't ball up the fist as much.
No, never.
But he's either given speeches on the importance of family and the speeches of bashing people over the head with a crowbar. He has two modes.
Yeah, toggle switch.
Did Justin Lin direct this?
Yes.
I have my number.
All right. Let's see. I think the critics started to like this one for what it was. The next one, Paul Walker died, I guess?
Was that the one after that?
Or he died filming the seven, I guess. Yeah.
Because number eight was the most recent one.
Right. All right. I'm in. You guys in?
Yep.
68.
I think the critics were on board at this point. I said 80.
Oh, my God. I said barely fresh 65.
Yeah, I went 67.
Fast Five is certified fresh.
Wow.
At 77%.
Oh, God.
Nice. Yeah. You know, I always don't do the premature celebration because all you got to do is get to 60 here to be fresh. 77, good. That's pretty good for
this,
them.
I got
to
see this one.
We can look it up. I think the previous one was pretty low rated. It was at some point the critics jumped on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And finally, from our more recent Christian Bale movie round, we offer this post-apocalyptic challenge. Long before Game of Thrones was popular, Christian Bale and a bald Matthew McConaughey took on an army of dragons in the 2002 pyrotechnic action flick, Reign
of
Fire.
Never heard of this.
Oh, yeah. They made a couple of dragon movies. They made a couple of volcano movies. Like, hey, that came out around the same time. Like, someone's like, hey, we need fire. We need two movies where they're coming from the ground and then two movies where they're coming from the sky. And they made a couple of dragon movies and in kind of the same time period. All right. Brian is doing well. Everyone's doing well, but it was that first one that really got me off the mark.
We were all off equally, though. I had 40, and they had the 30s, so we're not... That
yeah, okay.
So
all
I'll
right.
give you a quick anecdote here.
We're close.
I actually covered Disney at the time when Spyglass was doing this movie, and they made a $20 million offer to Arnold Schwarzenegger to come out of a tank with a cigar to beat the crap out of these dragons. And then when he passed, they made a $12 million offer to Sean Penn, and he passed on it too. So it ultimately became McConaughey, right?
Wow. It's mm-hmm. a good little factoid.
Yeah.
I love to steer people wrong without lying. I've never seen this movie.
Never seen this movie either.
It's really
cool.
I heard it's very cool.
Okay,
it's,
Brian.
Well, very, I wouldn't say. But it was pretty solid.
Oh, my God.
I
have no idea.
Am going 49.
Ooh. I am being contrarian here because this is a recurring joke on the Film Vault. So many people are like, dude, you have to see this movie. It's a good movie. It's the most Paul Bryan movie ever. And I've never seen it. So I'm going 83.
Holy wow. shit. And this does not look like a Paul Bryan movie at all.
It's supposed to be good.
All right, I don't like that they stole the tagline from The Legend of Billie Jean with Helen Slater, Fight Fire with Fire. Mm-hmm. For that alone, 31.
I'm going to go with a 54.
Well, somebody's going to win this game.
You got that right.
Reign of Fire is not all right. It's rotten at 42%.
Oh, hey, back in man. Business.
What the audience liked it better, though?
I did 39. 31.
I just set myself on fire.
Oh, man, I may be in this game.
What was yours?
49.
Oh.
Brutal.
Audience had it.
Yeah, I don't know if that movie holds up. I'd be careful, Brian.
Before we announce the scores.
I've had so many people tell me it was good.
Really?
Let's note that the tiebreaker for this round will also not be used.
Oh.
Chris, welcome to the show, man. Good showing over there.
All right, thank
coming
you.
In at 65, solid score.
That's really good. Solid.
Gina Grad.
Yeah, I think I did as well at 65.
You got a score of 81.
Yeah.
Which will only best one person in the room, and that one person is Bald Brian.
That's brutal, man.
Off the podium, Bald, fourth place. Mm. I think for the first time in history.
That is smart.
You
stage.
Have not placed.
I think it is the first time.
First time.
It is the first time. Your score is 94.
Abysmal. Embarrassing.
I think what it would have been if I had gotten 40 in the last one.
Leaving Adam Carolla 65 the score to beat.
Yeah, Chris and I were dancing around the same numbers for just about every movie, so I don't know.
Chris, I said you played well. Well enough to place second.
Oh, bummer.
Adam Carolla wins with a score of 57.
Oh, wow, what a one.
Got out of the gate with a shake. I got out of the gate 44 when the movie was 7 and clawed my way. Hey, kids, if you're listening, you never give up on yourself, ever.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream and dare to be like James Woods in that Miami Dade County bomb squad.
The double breasted suit.
Oh,
it's the Washington Tomatoes game. You know how we did.
Brian, Reign of Fire crushed you.
It really did. I would have been in the 50s.
I shouldn't have told those stories.
Did I win last week? Who won last week?
You did the right thing.
It was an unofficial game.
No, I won, and it was official.
Unofficial game.
Unofficial. Boy, Brian, let's pick up those pieces.
This is tough. This is tough.
I used to look up to you. Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep the metal parts from rubbing and causing friction three times,
fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the Edge, formulated in ways to exceed the toughest industry standards. It is Castrol Edge. All right, let me give a little plug. Reno, I'll be doing stand-up this Saturday at the Virginia Street Brew House, and then Oxnard Levity Live after that next weekend in Milwaukee and Chicago. Shelby American, it's out. You can see it on Netflix, but you can also grab a Blu-ray and DVD, a poster. We got some really cool posters at Chassis, Chassy. .com and No Safe Spaces coming to a theater near you at nosafespaces.com. I want to thank Laird Hamilton and his beautiful wife for providing our coffee machine out there. Mm. It's really good stuff.
Scrumptious.
Plant-based. And I got into it before he even dropped one off. So LairdSuperfood.com is where you go. And thanks, Jen, for that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the news right after this.